Welcome to Deloitte's IFRS Insurance Podcast. IFRS is a new accounting standard, and while it may not be felt right now, its impact will be very strong when it does arrive. IFRS is a little bit like a swell. Away from the coast, you don't feel it too strongly, but when you do get to the shore, it leads to waves that can crash violently. This podcast is the first episode in a series of podcasts focusing on IFRS in insurance and how to align Solvency II and IFRS. Episode 2 focuses on the target operating model implications of IFRS in insurance, and episode 3 on the IFRS impacts on external stakeholders and investor relations. With us today from Deloitte, Michelle Delabellière, Deloitte's EMEA Solvency II partner. Francesco Nagari, who is Deloitte's global IFRS insurance lead partner. Well, let's get started. Let's talk about IFRS and why it's important and really can't be ignored. Francesco.
These changes stem from the recent global financial crisis. The G20 group demanded better reporting standards to help particularly the financial services investors to understand what banks and insurers carry in their balance sheets in terms of risks, and also how those risks can help them to generate profits or losses.
So what does this do?
Under IFRS, insurance companies and banks will be able to give more clarity on how their profit arises, and also to be able to communicate to the investors how those profits and risks are linked with each other. These reforms happen at the same time as the European Union has embarked on a major reform of insurance solvency regulations, known as Solvency II. The International Accounting Standard Board has removed significantly the uncertainty around the IFRS timetable. The first wave of change will affect the way insurance companies account for their investments. There is a standard in IFRS, number 9, in particular, that will require all the accounting for bonds in corporate and governance to be accounted for in a different way. And that will be a major change.
Well, what is that different way?
There are two key changes here. The first one is that one of the criticisms of existing reporting that was highlighted by the crisis is the presence of too much fair value on the earnings of banks and insurers. And the second was the fact that there was no prospective view of what future events may bring in terms of recognition of credit losses. What IFRS 9 is going to ask insurers to do is really to look at their portfolio of bonds, corporate bonds and government bonds, and look forward. What are the expected level of defaults that those bonds may generate in the future? And using a probability-weighted assessment, book those losses as they are emerging from an expected future basis, rather than waiting for the events to occur before they book the loss.
It sounds like a huge amount of work. Michelle, a lot of work's been done and a lot of money's been spent with Solvency II, which, you know, there are changes to that now in the timeline and so on. How can we help ourselves to cope with IFRS using what you've got with Solvency II already?
Well, one thing to note actually that most of the Solvency II projects are going to be over within the next 12 or 18 months, at least for the bigger organization, which are also subject to IFRS. This may be another story for smaller mutuals, for example. But when you think of it, disbanding a Solvency II project just to have to build it up again for IFRS 1 year later does not make much sense. It does not make much sense also when you realize that you're going to use exactly the same human resources, actuaries, auditors, also the same technical resources in terms of data, information system to a large extent. So that's really where the two should be blended in a continuum rather than a stop-and-go approach.
So there's an overlap in terms of what some of the information that you've gathered, but also the skills that people have been using on Solvency II. Is that right?
Absolutely, because actually there's lots of common grounds between Solvency II and IFRS. Even if the details may differ, the parameters may differ, a lot of the fair value principles apply to both, a lot of technical concepts apply to both, and that's the reason why you're going to have to ask the same question, maybe from a different perspective, one being financial communication, the other being solvency and risk.
Francesco, what are the implications for insurers and what are the opportunities, the benefits possibly here?
Of all the sectors in the economy, insurance is the sector that has been paying the highest cost of capital. And one of the factors that has been affecting insurance companies paying much more to raise money when they want to grow their businesses is that investors do not understand how their profits are coming. From their financial statements today, insurance companies continue to struggle to communicate clearly and consistently to the investor community And that has resulted in less incentive from the wider investor community to put money in the insurance sector, creating this cost of capital differential, higher cost of capital for insurers that other sectors don't need to pay because they are actually better at communicating how their profits are made.
So I'm a CEO or a CFO of an insurer. Michelle and Francesco, what would you tell me? What can I get from this right now? Is there, for instance, say a competitive advantage or some kind of profit issue there?
Absolutely. What the IFRS and Solvency II reform can give you as the CEO of an insurance business is the opportunity to introduce for the first time in the history of your company of a single consistent language to report profit and capital, the two key business variables that every CEO is measured against. How much more profit are you making against as little capital as possible? And these two reforms are at the core of these two dimensions. So being able to actually master the new language and be able to communicate your strategy using this new language as early as possible can really break through the competitive advantage that you have trying to build, because you will be the first or among the first to actually inform the markets in a more transparent and compelling way that will attract investors to your company before the others.
Why are we talking about it now, and why should insurers listen to what you're saying right now?
Well, it's really, you know, about the story about turtles and hares, is that if you go stop and go and just cut the spending on Solvency II and then start again on IFRS, it's likely that you will miss the end of the race and not come out first. So it's really the idea of starting now while you've got all the motivation of the people, all the resources available in order to start investigating what IFRS is. The other point is just from a purely human resource management point of view. People have been working on Solvency II for years, so there's a sort of fatigue there. Giving them a different challenge on a different goal might also be a way to re-energize the organization while all the new aspects of Solvency II are starting to wear out.
So people and skills, Francesco, are these the only reasons? Are there other benefits perhaps?
There are other benefits and other reasons for sure. And one that is particularly compelling in Europe is that insurance companies have already invested significant amount on an infrastructure which is compliant with the Solvency II requirements. It would be a great mistake to not take the opportunity of the next 12 months to make this infrastructure capable of coping with the new requirements that will come from the IFRS reform. The requirements are well known. In fact, we also going to expect in the next few months the publication of the final draft of the IFRS rule. So over the next few months, probably by the spring of next year, everything will be much clearer. We have clarity in timetable today, and in a few months' time, we will have clarity on the requirements as well. There is no better time than 2013 to invest in a project that we could define it as IFRS proofing your Solvency II infrastructure. The wisdom here is to recognize that it is much better to follow the turtle strategy and keep walking and walking slowly but steadily, and use all the available time to actually build up gradually to a fully compliant organization against both Solvency II and IFRS requirements, and at the same time build significant value-added changes in the organization that will overall help you run your business much more effectively.
I'm back in the CFO seat for a second. Obviously, lots of investment we talked about. What are the practical steps that can be done? If you want to be the tortoise, not the hare, how do you go about that?
Well, the first thing to do is IFRS proofing your Solvency II investment. That means looking at all the things that you've done so far over the past few years and checking what's missing to meet Solvency II requirement and also IFRS requirement, known that, as Francesco said, most of the requirements for IFRS are now quite clear.
Infrastructure too?
Infrastructure too. It may come in form of coordination of processes. Under the data, I encompass the infrastructure systems. You need to get the data out of the systems where they are today and then moving them to an area where you can use them in an industrialized way.
We're looking for synergies that you can use, ensuring success from the competitive advantage possibly. What do you do? Yeah.
2013 is a critical point to start the journey. And there is a lot that has been done. And this is really the key pressure point that an executive will have to consider. Safeguarding assets is the most important thing that you can do in terms of maximizing the value that any penny you spend, any euro you spend in the future for the compliance with the Solvency II and IFRS delivers the maximum value to the business. So one thing that I would certainly recommend clients to consider is to plan the adoption of IFRS and to identify what are the specifications that the new technology IFRS will require are. At the moment, there is very little in the marketplace in terms of IFRS technology that can actually help insurance companies.
Francesco, Michelle mentioned there is an impact on systems, clearly. How can you work with, say, software manufacturers to leverage that relationship and make sure that it works?
Well, clearly systems have been already at the core of the implementation of Solvency II. The real dilemma from an executive perspective is that they know that the IFRS requirements will require further system developments. The question is, what are those developments and how do I secure myself the solution that can actually help me to implement a new system that allows me to be compliant both with Solvency II and IFRS requirements? Deloitte has invested already significant amount of efforts. We have been working for many months already with leading software developers around the world, because both Deloitte and those organizations have recognized the fact that this is going to be a major business challenge for our mutual clients. And we have been selected above others to actually advise these software houses to produce the solution that insurance companies will need.
Michelle, what do you think the challenges really that insurers face are and how they can negotiate those?
Well, one of the challenges that we've seen for Solvency II is having people working together, actuaries, risk accountants. So blending IFRS and Solvency II will be also establishing this dialogue between the finance and the risk constituency within the organization. And again, this is another reason why starting early should be also something to consider, because it takes time to learn how to work together. Most important will be the impact on the products you're writing today. Performance is going to be different under the IFRS world and in the current world for a given product. As we've seen for Solvency II, Solvency will be different for different lines of business.
If we're taking the tortoise, not the hare approach, then you're not investing all your money at one time. You can start to learn and you can start to develop as a result of that, can't you?
That's one of the key lessons. I think the point is, and the question we have from all of our clients is, how much money and to how much level of detail should I go in order to be efficient? So that's where first expertise of third parties could come handy, with the experience of having seen many different Solvency II organizations being set up and run, and apply this knowledge to the way IFRS should be implemented too. And the second point is also to consider what is your appetite to risk. The right amount of spend will come from first identifying where your weaknesses are and where you really need to apply your investments.
Michelle, let's talk about learning from Solvency II. There is lots to learn. There has been so much work done. What can feed into IFRS from Solvency II?
Well, one of the key points to learn from Solvency II is that really waiting for the last rules to be laid out before starting to work is not a good option. If we go back in history a little bit, we have to remember that the directive, the equivalent to the IFRS norm, was finally agreed in December 2009. For an implementation date, it has been forgotten since of the 1st of November 2012. We would already be in Solvency II if everything had gone to plan. And this means that we see nobody in the market would really be ready by today. And if the deadline had not been pushed, we would have faced a major issue. So the same, and this lesson is important for IFRS. Don't wait for the last minute before you start to work on implementing IFRS.
Thanks very much. Well, this podcast was the first episode in a series of podcasts focusing on IFRS in insurance. Episode 2 will focus on the target operating model implications of IFRS in insurance, and episode 3 on the IFRS impacts on stakeholder management. We do hope that you've enjoyed this podcast. Please do contact Francesco Nagari or Michelle de la Bellier, or visit www.deloitte.com/I2II for insights into IFRS insurance. For more information on the topics covered in this podcast, obviously, too. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye for now.